brought to you by the new Bose A20 Aviation Headset. Bose is now introducing their most advanced pilot headset ever, the new Bose A20 Aviation Headset. It provides significantly greater noise reduction than currently available, along with improved comfort, clear audio, and Bluetooth connectivity.
Hi, this is Mary Grady reporting for AvWeb. Whenever an aircraft goes missing and can't be found immediately, it always raises questions about our search and rescue technology. Today I took some of those questions to Master Sergeant Sal Provenzano at the Air Force Rescue Coordination Center in Anchorage, Alaska. Sergeant, thanks for talking with us today. Could you just start out, walk us through what are the steps that are set in motion when you get a report of a missing aircraft?
A number of things. When we get a report of an overdue aircraft, of course, we start researching. What we want to do is find out, of course, his point of departure and where he's going to, and then maybe any alternate arrival areas or arrival zones. We're going to look at that. We're going to look at the weather at the time of departure and all the way through the route of flight, how much fuel he had on board, how many folks were on board, what kind of emergency gear did he have on board? Was it an older 1-to-1 5ELT? Was it a new 406? Did he have a sat phone, survival gear, signaling devices, things of that nature? A description of the aircraft, terrain in between him, and when I say him, I'm talking about the aircraft, and the departure point and where he was going to. Look at weather to see if maybe that pushed him to go a different direction or an alternate route. We'll look at all these things, and it starts off with a lot of phone calls. We look for any kind of corroborating information. For example, if we have an overdue airplane going from point A to point B, and we start looking, have there been any ELT reports in that area, well, that's another piece of corroborating information. We're probably going to immediately launch to go investigate that. In any case, we're going to check fields along the way, whether it be short airfields or airfields that might have FAA personnel working there, or even fixed base operators, private individuals, through our list of contacts. And we're going to see if the individual stopped through there, maybe got gas, if they made it to that point, or even, you know, talk to somebody on the radio. We're going to do that with the FAA too, have them pull their tapes and make sure they the last known contact with the aircraft. And all of this is trying to first try and locate him and prove non-distress that the individual is okay. And furthermore, to try to narrow down that search area, you know, to kind of confine it more. The more we can do that, the quicker we can find somebody out there. So we'll look at all these things, then we come up with a mission plan, look at the assets that we have at our disposal, and we execute the plan, and we go search for the individual.
Okay, so from a real practical, sort of a little bit more technical standpoint, what's the real difference to you, whether it's a 121.5 or a 406 ELT? How does that affect your search strategy?
Quite a big difference. When you're dealing with 406 ELTs, as soon as the ELT is activated, we get an instant notification here in the RCC. I think the processing time is, I want to say it's like 5 minutes for it to go up to the satellite, processed, go down to the what they call a LUT, which is just a technical term for a receiver station, goes to the MCC, and ours happens to be in the United States in Suitland, Maryland, and then to the RCC. That process takes about 5 minutes. So we get indication in here, and since there's a bunch of information, if the individual filled out the registration information like they were supposed to, like is what's supposed to be done when you purchase one of these new ELTs, we'll get not only an indication that, hey, here's a potential distress situation because it's an ELT activation. Along with that, we'll get this encoded information, which will be points of contacts, a description of the airplane, individual's name. It gives us a place to start investigating the event, the event being an ELT activation. So the first thing we'll do is call those numbers on there, and of course the first question we'll ask is the airplane still flying, or is it on the ground, or Nine times out of ten, the answer we'll get is, no, it's in the hangar. I did go flying today, but it's in the hangar right now. And at which point we'll ask them to please go out there and secure their ELT. And that's an example of how, with the new 406 beacons, within 5 minutes, we can determine distress or non-distress and resolve the situation. Knowing that, you know, 90% of the time, ELT activations are false alarms. In other words, don't result in distress.
So even with the 406 beacons, then, that does nothing really to bring that percentage of false alarms down. Nine out of ten are false alarms?
Right, for the most part. Now, understand that it might be a little less due to the fact that we're talking better technology now. They're digital as opposed to old analog devices, you know. So in that regard, and ELTs have come a long way, just like any other product, they're constantly making improvements. Well, 406 ELTs are no different. There's more of them now, so more folks are making them, more companies are making them and improving on the lessons learned. So, however, just by the very nature of how an ELT works, there's some things that you can't, take care of because there's a human factor. And here's what I mean. Obviously, what activates an ELT, you can manually activate it, or it's a G-switch. So people are still going to have hard landings. People are going to still accidentally activate their ELTs or their arm switch when they're loading and unloading their airplanes. When they're doing maintenance on their airplanes or maybe changing a battery, you're still going to have those types of situations, whether it's a 406 high-speed top of the line or an older 1215. The difference being that now we have a quick means of resolving distress or non-distress by a phone call because of that registration information that's encoded in that transmission.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes quite a difference then. So,
by
contrast, then, if it's a 1215 ELT, how do you respond to that?
A 1215 ELT, if we hear about it, and that's the big key, especially up here in Alaska, the SARSAT system no longer monitors for 1215 signals or 243L. So the first thing that has to happen is some aircraft that has line of sight to the ELT that's been activated, and that's another difficult thing with terrain and whatnot in Alaska and weather. If you're in a valley somewhere and, you know, there's nobody flying overhead you, you'd have to have another aircraft flying within line of sight and within range of the ELT. That aircraft, in turn, would have to be monitoring for that signal on 1215, and thirdly, would have to have a means by which to report that ELT signal. Now, nine times out of ten in here, in the RCC, I can tell you, they come across as what we call high flyer reports. So you're talking somebody at 21,000 feet, 33,000 feet, sometimes in the teens, 11,000 feet, take your pick. And there's a mathematical ellipse that you can draw. Okay, he's at this geographic point. I picked up an ELT. He's at 15,000 feet. Well, when you compute what that parabola is, that's almost a quarter of the state of Alaska. So how do you search for that? You know, makes it very, very, very difficult. So when we're notified of 1215 ELT reports, it just makes the job in here and the job of proving, again, distress or non-distress, that much more difficult. So the procedure by which we tackle that that ELT activation or ELT report is not unlike how we would attack a report of an overdue aircraft or a 406 ELT. The difference being we don't have that starting point for the registered owner's contact information. So now what we have to do is, we make the phone calls out there, airfields within that parabola, other aircraft, call the FAA, flight service stations, and basically send out all these feelers, okay, have folks in the area listen up for ELTs, and especially at the lower altitudes. So we're trying again to refine that search area.
So the 406 ELTs, do they also encode their any kind of location information, or you're still just really searching
No. That's the second advantage, too, and I'm glad you brought that up. The second advantage to the 406, average accuracy, I mean, we've seen 1.25 back in the old days on SARSAT hits. It could be off as far as 20-some miles on the first hit. Now, every satellite pass, that would get more accurate and more accurate and closer and closer. Because it used a thing called Doppler shift, which probably take me 2 hours to explain. But suffice it to say, due to the curvature of the Earth, the satellite would say, okay, I'm hearing it here and here. Average error, I think, was 15 miles on the first hit. On a 406 beacon, again, it's a more powerful signal, more discreet, and digital. Even if it doesn't have a GPS position encoded with it, from the very first hit of a 406 beacon, the average error is a mile, mile and a half. That almost takes the search out of search and rescue. And then every successive pass, it only gets more and more accurate from there. The other thing is most 406 ELTs have a GPS with them. In other words, it's actually either a part of the ELT or there's a means by which you can just connect that, interface that ELT with the GPS already existing on your airplane. But that comes across as what we call an encoded position. And that's about as accurate as a GPS can get. You're getting that exact information here in the RCC. So it gives me a specific point where I can send a recovery or a rescue asset to go to. It really does take the search out of search and rescue.
Well, what about some of the commercially available products like personal locator beacons? Do you guys have any experience with people using those, and have they been helpful?
We do. As a matter of fact, the same system that we get the ELT information through the SARSAT system, the same 406 megahertz personal locator beacons come across. I want to make sure to differentiate between what we're referring to as personal locator beacons, which are basically handheld 406 ELTs, and which are manually activated. In other words, somebody makes a conscious decision that they're in distress and they need help, and they activate it. That's basically an instant launch for us with a recovery asset. Because, again, we know of the conscious decision that was made, hey, I'm in trouble, I need help. They're very rare that they're accidentally set off. So, and I don't want to confuse those with so-called commercially available devices called Spot. I think there's another one that's going to be coming out, or maybe already is out. They're in a different realm. They don't use a SARSAT system. They basically have a means by which some other features where you can track someone's progress. There's one button I think you can hit that says, hey, I'm not in an emergency, but I could kind of use some more gas or whatever the case may be. And the issue that we've been seeing in those, yes, they're another tool, for the rescue toolbox. In other words, to help somebody get out of a distress situation. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of training that goes along with that. So I know down in Lower 48 and also up here in Alaska a few times, we've come across situations where people would use them incorrectly maybe. An example is hit the emergency feature on it. Assets go out to respond to do the rescue. And they're told, no, we don't need you. All we wanted to do was change our pickup time. So, whereas we haven't seen that with 406 PLBs. And the reason, main reason is, when you purchase a 406 PLB, there's a process, a training process from the provider. There's training that you go through in the registration process on the SARSAT website when you do register it and fill out that information. So there's some knowledge there, you know, a briefing that goes down to kind of teach the individual, hey, you know, this is only to be used in a distress situation, you know. By all means, don't hesitate. But so we're seeing some, I guess you could call them teething problems with the Spot devices. But nonetheless, they are another useful tool when you're going out there in potentially harm's way and out in the wilderness to affect your own rescue and your recovery. I think people just need to understand how the process works. They're not a PLB. They're not going to go immediately to some picked up by a satellite and go to a rescue center. They're going to go to a commercial dispatch center for Spot, I think it's in Texas, who's going to look down a list and say, okay, this is in here in Alaska, I call the state troopers or whoever whoever the responsible agency might be. So there might be some added time to the process. You know, long story short, everything and anything folks can do when they go out, you know, it could be something as simple going out, for example, from Anchorage out to Mount Susitna, Little Sioux, whatever the case may be. You know, if we're talking about aviation, hey, file that flight plan. Remember to close it. If you make any changes, you know, use an RCO, talk to a flight service and let them know where you're at and what you want to do. Check that ELT before and after each flight and, you know, tune up 125, make sure it's not going on. And upgrade if you can to the 406. I mean, when you really look at the prices of how much it costs compared to what it would cost for a 125, and then you look at the overall cost of avionics on an airplane, what it costs to fly, it's, you know, for a device that you may have to never use, but the one time in your life when you're going to depend your life on it, you want it to work as advertised. Boy, I tell you, it's hard to make an argument against not getting one of the new 406 beacons, I got to tell you. The last thing, if I could throw out, is for folks, if they're interested to find out more, especially as it pertains to beacons, to go to the USMCC website. Basically, if you just Google USMCC or COSPAS or SARSAT, ELTs, you'll find the site, and there's a lot of good background information there too that speaks to not only the system, things that are happening in the future, and kind of the difference between 406s, 125s, advantages, disadvantages, that type of thing.
Okay, well, thank you for your time. Again, this was Mary Grady for AvWeb, talking with Master Sergeant Sal Provenzano at the Air Force Rescue Coordination Center in Alaska. Thanks for listening.
Brought to you by the new Bose A20 aviation headset, Bose is now introducing their most advanced pilot headset ever, the new Bose A20 aviation headset. It provides significantly greater noise reduction than currently available, along with improved comfort, clear audio, and Bluetooth connectivity.